Tonight, we're going to start a new series called From Brokenness to Breakthrough. And so what I want to do over the next few weeks is kind of look at this transformation that we want to take place, right? Because outside of Jesus, we're broken individuals. We can all agree on that, right? And because we've experienced life without him, and we know this. So what we want to do is we want to look at God's power to restore and to redeem, right? To make that mess and to turn it into ministry, right? I love that about, again, Chance and Tristan's story. That's what it is, right? There was this brokenness, right, that they were presented with, and both of them had this whole story and this history of continuing to kind of hit walls until this breakthrough happened. I know that's true for me as well, that, again, there was this kind of a cycle that was on repeat until I was really just awakened to the things of God, and I had this profound impact, and that's that breakthrough moment. And so we want to look at God's power to restore and redeem. And through this process, I want to look at different biblical figures, right? And so we're going to focus each night for 4 weeks on a different individual and their life story, people who faced hardships, failures, and struggles, yet they found victory in God. And the reason I want to do that is because these aren't fables or fairy tales, right? These are historical accounts. They're real individuals with real shortcomings that a real God redeemed them. And the same God that did that is the same God that will do it for us today, right? That he'll move in significant ways in our lives. And so this series, we're going to move through trust with Moses. That's where we're going to start tonight. And then after that, we're going to be looking at repentance with David, endurance with Job, and then ultimately healing through Jesus. And I think it's easy for us to write ourselves out of all that, right? Because we look at our stories. I know all the things I've done, right? Nobody has to remind me. And it's real easy for other people, right, to look at me and be like, that's not that bad. Well, but when you know all the details, sometimes it's hard to convince yourself of that. And you're like, God's going to use me. God's going to do something in me. God's going to change me. And the truth of the matter is, yes, he is, right? Because he's done it before. And people who were way worse off than we are, right? And he continues to do it. And so it's easy for us to write ourselves off. And because of that, the primary text for this is Psalms 34 and verse 18. And it says this, the Lord, say the Lord. I love that because this is Lord, right? This is God, God Almighty. And this is the Lord God, and he is close. Say that, close. Close to the brokenhearted. Out of all the people that our creator God could be close to, he's close to the brokenhearted. You know, we have something that we say around here about the individuals we're trying to reach, right? It's the hurting, the broken, the lost. It's the brokenhearted. And those are the people that God moves after. And I think one of the reasons is because it's the brokenhearted, right? Those that that have these visible wounds and these things going on in life, that we have an awareness sometimes greater than others of our need for God, right? For his redemption and for his love. And so it's not that God doesn't love everyone or pursue everyone, but I think sometimes we do. We have this awareness where our eyes are opened up just a little bit more to the presence of God. And so God is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. And so though we write ourselves off, God doesn't. That we ride ourselves out, right? God pursues us. He does, in fact, leave the 99, right, to pursue the one. And that he's got a special place in his heart for those of us that are crushed and seek him. And so again, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those whose spirits are crushed. And in this, that's where he takes this brokenness, this brokenheartedness, and these underdogs, and he raises them up to breakthrough, right? And he does this tremendous work. And so that's what I want to kind of, I want that to be the lens through which we view the next few weeks. And so I want to kick off tonight with trusting God in our wilderness and trusting God when things don't make sense and when we're far from him. And I titled tonight's message this, When the Road is Unclear. And what I want to talk about is how God leads us step by step, even when we feel lost and unqualified. Have you ever felt disqualified, unqualified? I know me stepping into this role especially, that was one of those things that I never had imposter syndrome greater than I had it with this, because I was like, I'm uneducated, right? I'm rough around the edges. I get mad and I fail and I do things that are embarrassing, and God, are you sure that you have the right person? I know when I stepped into marriage, I felt the same way again. I'm like, my wife is so beautiful and you know, she's never done the things I've done, and what kind of husband can I be, and all of this, and we feel these things, but we've got to trust God through it, whatever it may be, because God does have a plan, and God does have a purpose, and he does lead us step by step, especially when we feel lost and unqualified. And so when we feel stuck, when we feel unsure of what's next, that's the time that I think often God will show up the most, right? Because it's in those moments that we have a greater dependence on God, that it's the best place to be. One of my prayers throughout all of this is that I never lose that, right? Because the moment I ever step into my calling and think that I've got this, I have failed miserably, right? Because I need to be dependent on him. And the same is true with my marriage. If I ever step into my marriage and think I'm good to go, right? Then I failed. And my kids, or whatever it may be, that we need to maintain this dependence on him. And that's a good place to go. And so tonight, we want to talk about navigating this. We're going to see how Moses' story shows us that God is not limited by our failures. And again, how he leads us step by step, and he does. And so life's challenges can make us feel lost, unqualified, and stuck on our past failures. But God calls us to trust him step by step. Like Moses, we may doubt our ability, but God does not need our perfection. He needs our obedience. And when we feel trapped, God reminds us that he is the way maker, leading us forward even when the path seems impossible. And so tonight, as we get into the story of Moses, I want us to open up our Bibles to Exodus chapter 2. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at Moses' life. So we're going to cover a lot of scripture in one sense. I'm going to paraphrase a lot tonight and give summaries. But we're going to look at the life of Moses and how God, one, used him, and how he had to be dependent on God leading him in each step, and how we can and should do the same in our own lives, because the truth of the matter is you're gonna face situations where you don't know what to do. Or at least I hope you are, because if you think you know what to do all the time, you're kind of an idiot. But so we wanna be in those places, right? And just have this awareness of I need God, and how is God gonna lead me? How can I listen to him through it? And so Moses' story technically begins in Exodus 1, during a time when the Israelites were enslaved in Egypt. The Israelites had grown numerous under Pharaoh, and what begins to take place is Pharaoh is threatened by them. Right, he's afraid that they're gonna rise up and overthrow them, and so he has this plan, and it's to begin to execute baby Hebrew boys, and so that's kind of where Moses' story really comes on the pages in a significant way. His mother was worried. And so if you guys grew up in church, you know what took place. She placed him in a basket, floated it down the Nile. Moses' sister kind of followed along. Pharaoh's daughter finds it. The sister says, would you like me to go get a nursemaid? I happen to know somebody. And goes and gets Moses' mother. And so she's able to wean her own son. He ends up ultimately growing up in Pharaoh's court. And God has his hand on him. God has his hand on him from the beginning. And as Moses grows, he grows up in this life of luxury, right? This life of privilege. And his people, the Hebrews, the Israelites, may grow up in contrast to this. They're slaves, right? They're driven harshly, and they're treated poorly. And Moses' heart begins to ache for his people. But then he begins to take things into his own hands, which is kind of where we want to pick up right now. And so in Exodus 2:11, leading up to that, Moses is a grown man. He's about 40 years old, and he feels this connection despite his royal upbringing. And then as he's witnessing the suffering firsthand, this moment happens, and it marks a turning point in his life. And so Exodus 2:11, it says this, Many years later, when Moses had grown up, he went out to visit his own people, the Hebrews, and he saw how hard they were forced to work. During his visit, he saw an Egyptian beating one of his fellow Hebrews. After looking in all directions to make sure no one was watching, Moses kills the Egyptian and hides his body in the sand. And so here's this man that God has purposed for something. And along the way, Moses takes this purpose into his own hands, right? He's not relying on God. He's relying on gut or instinct and leaning into this fleshly desire. And though I believe that God had always intended for Moses to deliver his people, Moses goes about it the wrong way. And in this moment of outburst, of anger, he strikes down this Egyptian. How many of you know that wasn't the right choice, right? Because now he's committed murder. And even though he's in a position of authority and power, he's a Hebrew. He's killed an Egyptian. He's not of the right bloodline to be beating anybody to death. Even though that Pharaoh's daughter had raised him, again, this is an Egyptian official that he's killed. And so this is what happens. It says, the next day, when Moses went out to visit his people again, he saw two Hebrew men fighting. He said, why are you beating up your friend? Moses said to them, I said to the ones who had started the fight. And so Moses is still, his heart's there. He's not really thinking much about what had taken place. And he's looking to make a difference. He's looking to make a difference, but he's not going about it the right way. And then it goes on, it says, the man replied, who appointed you our prince and judge? Are you going to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday? And so cat's out of the bag right now. Like, and I don't know if you've ever been in those moments where you realize that you're found out, where all the blood seems to drain out of your body. And you're like, not only have I committed a felony, but people know about it. And it's like, I can think of multiple instances in my life where I've just, it's like it drains out through your feet, right? It's just like, whew, oh snap, like what next? And so are you gonna kill me like you killed that Egyptian? And then Moses was afraid, thinking, everyone knows what I did. And sure enough, Pharaoh heard what had happened and he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in the land of Midian. When Moses arrived in Midian, he sat down beside a well. And so here's Moses. He's got this call, this purpose, right? But there's this brokenness in him. Before the murder had taken place, right? There was this brokenness because you don't lash out and kill a person unless there's some things that just aren't quite right. And so he does this, but he flees and arrives at Midian and he sits down in the well. And if you know the story, if you've heard it, he ends up meeting this fellow Jethro's daughter and being taken into his family. But we're not going to get into that right now. But this is what I want you to know. When the road seems unclear, we need to remember that our past doesn't disqualify us. It prepares us. Again, our past doesn't disqualify us. It prepares us. Moses fled Egypt due to his failures, but God had a plan for him. God wasn't through. God wasn't like, Moses, man, I was getting ready to use you, but now you've messed up. I've got no use for you. No, God still had a plan for him. And this, his past here didn't disqualify him. It prepared him. And so it prepared him for his calling, right? And what was next. And so because Moses goes on later to be used by God, he has this moment where God sends him back to Pharaoh and he leads the Israelites out of Egypt and into the wilderness. And I wrote some of these things down. Moses is past in Egyptian royalty. There he gained leadership skills, education, and knowledge of Pharaoh's court. I wonder how important that was when Moses had to go back and confront Pharaoh. I would imagine he knew how things worked, right? And how to navigate that type of atmosphere. I grew up pretty blue collar, right? And when I find myself in white collar settings like that, I get super uncomfortable. I don't know what to do. So if God's like ever like, hey, I need you to go deal with these wealthy business people, I'm gonna freak out. I'm like, I don't know, like, what do I wear, right? Is boots and jeans okay? Like, I just don't know. But Pharaoh was prepared for that. And I don't think that's any small thing. And I wrote this down. His failure in Egypt right? The murder of an individual, it taught him humility and the danger of self-reliance. He'd went out once, and the burden of his heart to free his people, he took it into his own hands. And when he did that, he stepped into failure, right? And yeah, it added to his brokenness, but through that, as he repented and turned from it, it taught him humility and the dangers of self-reliance. His wilderness season. You know, Moses was 40 when he murdered the Egyptian and fled. You guys know how long he was in the Midian wilderness with Jethro? For 40 years. He spent 40 years in Pharaoh's court learning how to navigate that. He spent another 40 years as a shepherd. I wonder how that came into play, right? And the next 40 years, where he was gonna spend an additional 40 years leading the people of Israel, shepherding them and leading them. And so his wilderness season, he developed patience, dependence on God, and a shepherd's heart when he would need it to lead, I think, millions of Hebrew people on this journey towards the promised land, right? Because this past, these things that they didn't disqualify him, they prepared him. Insecurities and weakness forced him to trust in God's strength rather than on his own. And our seasons of waiting and obscurity, they're often when God shapes us the most for our calling. And we think that these things, right, that we face, that somehow it creates rejection in God's heart towards us. That somehow, because we went through it, that's the thing, right? That was the straw that broke the camel's back, and God's no longer able to use us. But what I want you to hear, that God is so great that even in that, he can prepare and equip you for a greater work, right? I know that in my life, I don't think God caused any of the things to happen to me that were bad. I think they were a result of sinful, broken people. And I think most of it was the result of my stupidity, which is immense and knows no bounds, right? And 18 years of trying to do things on my own. But God is so good that he'll use everything for his good, for those that are called according to his purpose. And these past mistakes, they didn't disqualify me. They prepared me for God's call. They make me effective in what he wanted me to do and these desires, right? And so, and for so long, again, I thought that was the thing. God can save everyone but me because I know what I've done. I know the deep, dark secrets. I know all the skeletons and everybody. I know. And if God only knew, he does. And while you were sinning, while you're in that, God called you just like he called Moses. And those past mistakes, right? The messed up misery of it all, if you'll allow him, it'll become your greatest ministry. And he'll use it. He'll use it to make a great impact in your life and in the lives of those around you. Many people feel trapped by their past, don't we? Mistakes, failures, trauma on repeat. Cancel culture reinforces the idea that past mistakes define your future. I am so grateful there was no social media when I was 16. But that's not how God operates. When we come into that relationship with him and our brokenness and we come to him in humility and say, Lord, I love you. I'm going to make you God of everything. He forgets all of that as far as the East is from the West. No longer defines you. You're no longer accountable to that in his eyes. He uses broken and imperfect people for his glory. And like Moses, we must stop running from our past and allow God to redeem it. So I want to ask you, what personal failures have you allowed to hold you back from walking in God's purpose? What personal failures have you allowed to be excuses for why you don't get engaged in the church, why you don't serve, why you don't quit drinking, why you don't apologize to your wife and kids or your husband and kids, right? What past failures have you allowed to paralyze you where you're at and keep you from fulfilling God's call on your life? And so, when the road seems unclear, we need to remember our past does not disqualify us. It prepares us. Let's fast forward To Moses' encounter with the burning bush. Again, this happens towards the end of the second 40 years. So first 40 years, Moses is in Pharaoh's court. The second 40, he's in the wilderness with Jethro and his wife. And you know, he's just doing life and raising a family. And then he has this encounter, right? And so he spent 40 years as a shepherd after fleeing Egypt and killing the Egyptian. And while tending his father-in-law, Jethro's flock, he sees a bush that's on fire, but it's not consumed. And we're going to pick up there. This is in Exodus chapter 3, verse 7. It says, "Then the Lord told him, 'I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt.'" And I should have put this in there. So big reveal, the bush is God, if you didn't know that. And I know some of you laugh, but I get this. Some of you weren't raised in church and you may not know the story. And so that's my bad. I should have put that in there. As God comes, or as Moses comes, God tells him to remove his sandals. He's on holy ground. And this is an encounter with the living God. God has presented himself there and God begins to have this conversation. And this is the conversation. He says, "Then the Lord told him, 'I've certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I've heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. Yes, I'm aware of their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey, the land where the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites now live. Look, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I have seen how harshly the Egyptians abused them.'" And then he goes on, he says, "Now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people out of Egypt." Now, if I was Moses, I would have a couple questions. Number one was, where you been the last 40 years? You remember when I bludgeoned that Egyptian to death? I really could have used you then. But I think God was doing a work in his life. Number two is like, why me? Why now? Right? But God's specific here. He says, who am I sending? I'm sending you. And this speaks to the assignment that God's given us, right? In all of this, that's one of the things I think the enemy wants to keep from us is that there is something your purpose for. And all of the brokenness we go through, it's not for nothing. Again, I don't think it's a result of God. That's sin and brokenness and all of that. But in it, God will give us a great purpose and assignment. In this, he's saying, you. I'm sending you. And in our wilderness moments, our burning bush moments, how many times have we missed it where God spoke to you about something and he said, I'm sending you. And we ignored him. And we made excuses. Because that's what Moses is about to do. God says that, and Moses says, but Moses protested to God, "Who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people out of Egypt?" That's what our brokenness does. And these seasons, right? And it's what the enemy leverages. He wants us to think about, who are you? Again, when I stepped into my calling, that's what I thought about. I don't come from an educated family. I mean, it didn't take long listening to me speak to know that, right? And I lack just certain characteristics and aspects that traditionally make good preachers and pastors. And the brokenness of my family. And when God called me to something, I said, who am I? Who am I? And I forgot that it wasn't about me. It was about him. And that's what Moses is getting ready to realize. What God's getting ready to reveal to him. And so instead of responding in faith, Moses immediately questions his qualifications. His past failures, his insecurities resurface. He tried to help the Israelites. He was rejected. It ended in murder. He sees himself as unworthy and unqualified for leadership, possibly still carrying the shame from the past. But God answered, and I like this because God doesn't answer his question of who he is. God answers with this, and he says, I. Moses says, who am I? And God says, no. I will be with you. Blows past his insecurities. It says, what I'm asking you to do has nothing to do with your ability, has nothing to do with your qualifications. Has everything to do with mine. And God answered, I will be with you. And this is your sign. that I am the one who sent you. When Moses, when you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this very mountain. And when the road seems unclear, we need to remember we must trust God even when we don't feel qualified. So we must trust God even when we don't feel qualified. Moses doubted himself, but God reassured him, I will be with you. God doesn't answer Moses' insecurities. He reminds him of who he is, of his capabilities. You know, it's one of those moments like, dude, like I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Like I'm the God that's powerful. I am the God that will deliver you. I am Yahweh. God says, I will be with you. And God doesn't answer Moses' doubt with reason why he's qualified. Instead, he gives the most important promise, I will be with you. And the things that God's called you to on this road, maybe you're stepping out of addiction for the first time. I want you to know this, God will be with you. Your ability to be sober and have a changed life, it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with God and what he can do and what he will do. Maybe you're struggling and you're in a marriage. It's broken. You don't see a way out. I get it. I've had seasons that felt like that. Now, my ability to have a healthy marriage wasn't just dependent on me. It was God. God would see me through. And these things that we face, these hardships and these seasons, it's not our insecurities that we need to worry about. We need to be concerned about the God whom we serve. He says, I will be with you. I will be with you. The success of Moses' mission does not depend on Moses. It depends on God's presence. The same is true for you. In a world that values credentials, experience, self-confidence, many of us feel we're not enough to accomplish our purpose. You know what? Kind of right. Because it's not about us. It's about him. Imposter syndrome's real. Even in faith, Moses struggled with self-doubt, yet God didn't need his perfection. You know what he needed? His obedience. He didn't need him to be perfect, didn't need him to speak right, didn't need him to know everything. Needed him to show up, be faithful, be obedient. And in our obedience, God will do exceedingly more than we can understand. God is calling his people to step forward. He's calling you to step forward, not in our strength, but in his. God's presence is more important than our ability. God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called. Again, I go back to my story because it's the one I'm living. Like 10 years ago, I mean, talk about Moses. He's like, God, I stutter. I can't talk. I remember sweating profusely and throwing up in the bathroom in the kids ministry area because I was supposed to talk to fifth graders. And God's like, no, this is you. This is what you're supposed to do. I'm like, you got the wrong guy. But in my obedience, God continues to do a great work. In our obedience, whatever it is, God does a great work. When I look at my family, people are like, how do you raise 6 kids? It's God. I don't know how I feed them most weeks. Right? I mean, but it's God. And so when you feel like you're not enough, when you feel like you don't have a way out, just trust him. Past mistakes, God will use them. He'll work through them. And when we don't feel qualified, we just need to trust him. Trust that he's moving. So what area of your life are you hesitating to obey God because you feel unqualified? Greatest decision I made was to trust him with everything, give my life to him. And there was, to marry Janelle, I think that was God's hand. I felt unqualified there. To have a family of 6 and to to have all my kids. And if you guys know the story, there was decisions in that. I felt unqualified. Step into pastoral ministry, feel unqualified. And these are some of the greatest blessings in my life today. I felt unqualified to be sober. I never thought that would be a thing. And so I encourage you, just reflect on that. What area of your life are you hesitating to obey God because you feel unqualified? So you're in Exodus 3. We're gonna jump all the way to Exodus 14. Now a lot's happened. Moses, he goes back to Egypt, right? He's obedient to God. God uses him in all of that. After 400 years of slavery, the Israelites are finally freed from Egypt. 10 plagues, whole nine yards, right? All the way down to God striking down the firstborn of every Egyptian, right? Major things have happened. Pharaoh reluctantly lets them go. God leads them out of Egypt, pillar of cloud by day, pillar of fire by night. Spectacular, right? God's mighty hand has struck down the most powerful nation and army to free his people. And they are now on their way, wealthy, mind you, because God pressed upon the Egyptians' heart to give them wealth and resources. And they're off, right? And instead of taking a short direction to Canaan, God led them towards the Red Sea. One, knowing that they weren't ready for battle, but two, again, to show off his glory and his awesomeness. But something happens. Pharaoh, his heart changes, right? And he's like, why are we doing this? And so he begins to pursue. And so Pharaoh's change of heart, that's Exodus 14, 1 through 9. He has this regret, and here they go. Pharaoh and the Egyptians, they pin the Hebrews up against the Red Sea. They have nowhere to go. And so here are people who, they've been slaves, they're builders, they're not warriors, and they're facing the greatest, most powerful army on the face of the earth. To their back is the sea. Not really a whole lot they can do there. They don't have ships, right? Or death. So it's basically like death on both sides, but God's gonna show up. And in verse 10, Exodus 14, 10, it says, as Pharaoh approached, the people of Israel looked up and panicked when they saw the Egyptians overtaking them. They cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, why did you bring us out here to die in the wilderness? Weren't there enough graves for us in Egypt? What have you done to us? Why did you make us leave Egypt? Didn't we tell you this would happen? While we're still in Egypt, we said, leave us alone. Let us be slaves to the Egyptians. It's better to be slaves in Egypt than a corpse in the wilderness. Now, all through their story, they just remind me of a bunch of toddlers most of the time, like just the dramaticness of, hey, why have you brought us out here to die? Weren't there enough graves back in Egypt? But Moses, he told the people this. He said, don't be afraid. He said, just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today. The Egyptians you see today will never be seen again. The Lord himself will fight for you. Just stay calm. And I love that. Just that picture of Moses as a leader, right? These people cry out almost in tantrum, and there's fear and there's uncertainty. And Moses' confidence and his faith is not in them, right? Because if he looked out, he would be like, yeah, we're doomed. What are we going to do with this? But no, he says, no, you just stop. You just stand still. Because God's gonna move today. And when the road seems unclear, we need to remember this, that God makes a way when there seems to be no way. God makes a way when there seems to be no way. And so what happens after this, if you know the story, that Moses cries out to God, and God says, basically, what are you crying out to me for? Like, raise your hand, like do something about it. And God moves in this moment, and the Red Sea is split. And the Israelites were able to walk through on dry land, and the Egyptians try to follow, and God crushes them with the sea, wipes out this entire army in a spectacular fashion, right? And we can be confident of this. Nobody in this Hebrew camp was thinking, I bet God's gonna split the sea behind us, right? I'm sure that was not on the bucket list there. But that's what God does, right? He makes a way where we see no way. And God's ways are greater than our ways, right? And his understanding beyond our understanding. And sometimes we think our little feeble lives and And it's such a mess to us. And we hold it up to God like, what are you going to do with this anyway? It's like, but God, infinite in wisdom and glory and power, can move. I mean, this again, this is a God that split the sea. And we think that somehow he can't help us to navigate our finances, right? Or to help us move forward in sobriety, or to help us to deal with teenagers or whatever it may be in our life. And God can make a way where there is no way, where we see no way. And so again, God makes a way where there seems to be no way. And at certain times, no matter what it is, financial struggle, family crisis, global instability, when people feel stuck, hopeless, and powerless. But just like Israel at the Red Sea, God has a way forward that we cannot see. And the call is not to panic on this road to brokenness, but to trust. Faith moves forward even when the path isn't visible. I know there's so much that God has done that I didn't understand, I didn't see. Crises that have been averted, blessings that have been received. I honestly can't even count all the doors that have opened up in different ways that were not on my radar at all. I remember even coming on church staff. That wasn't a possibility. There was no opening, no job posted. I felt God's call to ministry and I was trying to be faithful. And lo and behold, God opens it. I had a heart for marriage. I met my wife 6 months before we got wed. I don't necessarily, you know, encourage that. Date for a year. But out of nowhere, this was God's plan for me. I always wanted, and I may be crazy, I wanted a big family. I come from a family of five. And you guys have heard my testimony, you know, this, and I may cry just talking about it. I always wanted five kids. And, you know, after in my addiction, I knocked up two women. I'm like, I'm never knocking up another woman. Yeah, just forget that. You know, I'm not trying to have my own Jerry Springer and Maury episode going on here. God not only brings me a woman, but brings me a woman with four kids that needed somebody to love them and care for them. And I was able to go from two to six because God makes a way where we don't see a way, right? Those desires of our heart, he's not indifferent to them. And so I don't know what you're going through, right, in your season, but as we trust God, as we're obedient to him and faithful, God opens doors and makes things happen in our lives that we don't understand. He rescues us and he moves on our behalf. And when the road seems unclear, we need to remember that God makes a way where there seems to be no way. And breakthrough, it comes when we stop trying to fix things in our own strength. We let God fight for us. Where we stop trying to circumvent God's word and do things out of order and ignore what he's called us to do. And we just trust him in all of it and say, God, I'm just going to be obedient and I'm going to trust you. And in that, breakthrough will happen. What impossible situation in your life do you need to trust God with today? I want us to do this. I want us to bow our heads, close our eyes. And I want you to think about that. You know, recovery and transformation are not about our strength, but God's faithfulness. And like Moses, we need to let go of the past. We need to trust God despite our insecurities and step forward even when we don't see a way. And so again, what impossible situation do you need to trust God with? Begin to think about that. You know, this is not a journey. This is a journey, not a destination. It's one step at a time. We don't need all the answers. We just need to trust the one who has them. And we just need to figure out, you know, what do we need to leave behind as we pursue God tonight? So just spend a moment with him. Just thinking about that.